Hello and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And the Tour de France may be over, but for some reason, we're still here.
Yeah, the world didn't end after the Tour de France.
Surprisingly. There's actually still a lot of racing on the calendar. The next event on the World Tour docket is the Clásica de San Sebastián, which is a race that I like a whole lot, even though it kind of doesn't quite maybe get the promotional side that a lot of other big races get. We are certainly going to do our best to give it the recognition it deserves. A couple big interviews in this show, by the way, so stay tuned for those. San Sebastian happens to be a major city in Spain's Basque Country, which is a bilingual region where a lot of people speak the Basque language, unsurprisingly. It's really a cycling mecca. Cycling is huge in the Basque Country. This is a race that's only been around since the 80s, but it's really quickly grown into a popular race for the international peloton. It's been on the Pro Tour since the inception of the Pro Tour. And unlike a lot of other races out there, you look at the list of winners since its creation in 1981, you might expect to see a whole lot of Basque riders. That's kind of what I think you come to expect from a race when it's relatively new, is a lot of local riders win. But I think the Basque Country is such a popular place for international cycling that it drew the international riders right away. So yeah, there are a couple of Basque winners early on, but really quickly you get into some of the top names in international cycling coming to this race, including Lance Armstrong, but also other names. Laurent Jalabert won it twice in the early 2000s, and in the last couple of years there have not been any Basque winners at all. There really haven't even been any Basque high podium finishers. So big race for the international peloton, even if maybe it's a little underpromoted.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's a cool race. I think it was a little bit cooler when it was part of the World Cup and you had all these classics guys that had to show up and race this hilly Spanish race. But for all the coolness, it is super underpromoted and kind of underproduced. Like, especially coming on the heels of the Tour, it feels a little bit like a local public access crew with handycams got a couple of Vespas and decided to, you know, broadcast a race. There's, you know, you miss all sorts of stuff. The camera's kind of flailing about wildly on the back of the motorbike. It's charming in its own way, and they usually get the point across, but it also just, it feels really shoestring, and it shouldn't, because as you mentioned, this is one of the few places in the world outside of Belgium where people really care about bike racing. But compared to the almost lyrical way Sporza produces a race, this is just, you know, it's a hot mess. And it's also, I think because maybe of media fatigue, I think coming right after the Tour, San Sebastian kind of has it tough because everyone is freaking exhausted and tired of talking about bike racing. And while this is a really cool event, it's not the Tour de France, and you end up with people being like, look, I just need to nap for a couple of days. Let somebody else cover this event.
Yeah, and not only the media, you also get this kind of weird, the dynamic of riders coming off the Tour and other kind of one-day specialists coming in. You look at this start list, and there's a whole lot of really good riders here, but a lot of times, a lot of those big names drop out in the first 50 kilometers because they're just exhausted from riding the Tour.
Yeah, I think that can cut both ways. I think you can get some guys who were maybe kind of near misses or who are strong GC riders at the Tour, but who are only there because it's the Tour and really they're going to be better at a race like this. They kind of come in really sharp from that training block. And they're kind of mixing in with this group of riders who are totally on the other side of the spectrum, where they haven't raced since April, not seriously anyway. But so they're really fresh. They just don't have that sharpness. It can be an interesting contrast in terms of, you know, if you're into the physiology of fitness, to see those two groups throw down.
And speaking of that, the last several years, it's been riders coming off of a Tour de France that have won this race. The riders who are coming in from other races haven't quite lived up to those coming off of a Grand Tour. So yeah, it must cut both ways because of the way that we've seen the results the last couple of years. We're going to interrupt our regularly scheduled Cosmo and Dane banter to bring you some expert local insight. We were happy to talk to a former racer, now videographer, cycling tips journalist. Generally, he's a jack of all trades. Dave Everett in one of our Giro podcasts. And I got him on the line for our San Sebastian show to drop some knowledge on us about a race that he knows pretty well. So here's the conversation I had with Dave Everett not long ago. Dave, thanks for taking some time to chat.
Thank you for having us again.
So, Dave, how was the Tour de France? You were on the road for quite a long time.
Nearly a month in total, what with getting all the press stuff beforehand, bike launches, interviews before the race. Yeah, it works out to about a day short of a month. So it's a long trip and tiring, to say the least. I've in the past 48 hours, I've probably slept about 30 of them, I reckon. It takes its toll, not just out the riders, but the journalists too. I could moan, but I better not. I'd be a good lad.
That's good. Dave, from your accent, I think our listeners can probably deduce that you are not from the Basque Country originally. Although rainy, green mostly, I think there are some similarities between Basque Country and Northern England.
Oh, hell of a lot of similarities, yeah.
What?
Bad haircuts as well.
Exactly, yeah. So where you have local knowledge, though, of the Basque Country, of this race. Where does that come from?
I'm living here now. I've sort of spent the past three summers here. Picked up a French girlfriend from the Basque region. So, yeah, moved here, happily living here. Get to ride my bike in the area when I'm not off to the Tour de France or other events. So, yeah, it's an absolute awesome place to live.
And you're on the French side of the Basque Country now. What are you, like less than an hour from the city?
From ride time from the city, I'm probably 2-hour bike ride at most, in a car, 40 minutes. I'm in Anglet, which is like 2-3 towns over from the border. So I've got the best of both worlds. I've got good bread and rubbish coffee on the French side. So if I head over to Spain, which is like there's a bridge that separates the two borders, I've got great coffee and rubbish bread. So yeah, it's a good balance.
So you can, in the morning, you can head across the border to get your coffee, and then you can have some afternoon bread back home. That sounds pretty nice.
It's the life.
So can you tell me, what is it about the culture of the Basque Country that draws so many cyclists? This race it's not that old, and yet it was on the Pro Tour from the beginning of the Pro Tour. It's been an international bike race. It's drawn a lot of big riders from the start. And to me, that would seem like there's some kind of connection there with the Basqueness of it all.
It's bizarre. I don't know whether it's ingrained in their culture, but even you look at the French Basque side and the Spanish Basque side, you go over the Spanish side, head over, it's, like I say, it's a bridge. There's a river running through that basically separates the two borders. And as soon as you're on that side, there's a lot more cyclists. The French side of the Basque region, they're a lot older. The guys who ride the bike, they may be 50, 60, and there's not that at younger age group coming through anymore. But the Spanish side, yeah, it's dense with cyclists, and you've got a lot of brands over there. You've got BH bikes, Orbea, Spiuk. You've got Extrondo, is that how you pronounce it? Clothing range. So there's even the brands. It just seems to be ingrained in the culture. Plus you get a lot of foreigners moving there as well. There's Neil Stevens, DS of Orica Greenedge, living in San Sebastian. And then there's Alan Davis, who used to ride for Orica and Mapei, I think. He lives there now and runs a holiday company, from what I know, a cycling holiday company.
Yeah, I think I've actually seen that on Twitter. He does tours around the area.
Yeah.
Have you ridden any of the climbs that you know, the Heiskebel or the Arcole that they take on in the race?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Heiskebel's, it's a regular for me. I go over there and when I need a good workout. It's both sides are equally as tough. It is the foothills of the Pyrenees. And the climb itself, especially the Heiskebel, the side that they do it is the steeper and shorter side, and it is... it's quite an aggressive climb.
Looking at the start list, Valverde won last year, and he's won here in the past as well. To me, he looks kind of like the favorite. Anybody that you kind of see as a good dark horse for the race?
Dark horse, that's a good one. Well, that's Gilbert. I've sort of kept an eye on the other races that have been going on while the tour's not been on, and I've seen he's taken a win. I couldn't tell you what race it was, but I did see he's taken a win in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, he won that GP Cerami, and then he just won again in Wallonie. You must have been watching a lot of Sporza while you were doing some downtime.
Yeah, when you're downtime, you mean when you're supposed to be working.
That's right. Well, if you're watching cycling, who can blame you for...
You've got to keep up to date, haven't you?
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, Gilbert, but Molyneux as well. I feel he was just him and Ryder Heserdahl might be another two worth watching. Like Ryder in the last week was seemed to be going really well, especially it was up Alpe d'Huez, wasn't it? He had a stunning ride as well.
Do you get a sense of kind of the reception within the Basque Country for this race, whether this is a big deal there, whether people are going to be flocking to watch, whether on TV or lining the roads?
It has a really good turnout, especially the main climbs, and the town centre's always packed. You go there early morning, and it's, yeah, loads of people milling about. They've got the stands out. It's not like your Northern Classics. It's not as... heavily populated with fans. It is quieter, but it is all the locals turning up to watch it. You don't have a lot of other nations rocking up to come and check it out. But it's a real nice atmosphere as well, and it feels a lot more laid back. Like getting press accreditation sometimes seems hit and miss, but it's never a major problem to get into the start area to interview the riders or chat to people. It's just... Yeah, it's a lot more laid back, but has a real good local feel to it.
Are you going to be at the race?
I hope to. Yeah, the other thing that's going on in the same region this weekend's the Bayonne Festival. So it's a bit like the Pamplona Festival. Everyone rocks up in white and red and gets drunk and enjoys themselves. So it's one or the other. But I think I'll be heading for San Sebastian. I'll avoid all the drunken shenanigans over in Bayonne.
I don't think you could go wrong. You've either got a bike race or shenanigans, and both of those, to me, they sound like, you know, good things to do.
Yeah, I might split myself in two.
All right. Thanks a whole lot, Dave. We'll talk to you soon.
Excellent. Thank you.
That was the always insightful Dave Everett. I think I've got a much better feel for what this race is about. The atmosphere, the people who are going to show up at the roadside. So let's take a look at this hilly, difficult route that draws so many top climbers to the Basque Country. The Clásica de San Sebastián is a 219-kilometer race that kind of folds in and back around on itself a couple times to take on the big climbs in the San Sebastián area more than once. This is a race that really favors guys who are able to take on some not really long climbs, but difficult ones. The hardest climb in the Clásica de San Sebastián, it comes early on in the day, the Alto Iturburu, and it's probably going to soften the legs, but it's only within the first 60 kilometers or so, so it's not, I wouldn't think, going to spur any real action. The real climb that I think defines this race is the Jaizkibel climb. As Dave and I kind of talked about a bit before, the Jaizkibel is really the marquee climb of the race. It's about 8 kilometers in length, over 5% gradient. They go up, they go down. They go up the Arcole climb, they go down that, and then they do it all over again. So it's two trips up both climbs before they come into the town of San Sebastián for the finale, where there's one last little lump before the line. And it's a relatively new addition to the race, which I think has kind of made this a different sort of race. It's not a really long climb. It's under 3 kilometers, but I think the average gradient's getting up near 10%. And we saw last year that after a long day of some tough climbs, the pack was really whittled down by the time they got there, and plenty of attacks flew away on this last little lump before the finish line, which is flat. But with a climb like this not so far from the line, a sprint is going to be a tall order because it's going to be tough to keep this race under control.
I mean, I am almost perennially a big fan of finishes like this. I think for the past couple years, I wouldn't call them nail biters, but we've had kind of clock checking situations where there's a guy up the road and then there's this, you know, are they going to get caught? Is the group going to get it together? It sets up a nicely suspenseful finish. It's, you know, not amazing, or at least hasn't been recently, but I think it's good at showing what's interesting about bike racing versus prompting everybody to start busting out the pocket calculators on how much some guy weighs and how much watts he has to be producing based on a headwind that we may or may not know about to get to the top of a climb.
There's a lot more to this race than just watts and climbing. There's lots more to every race than just those things. But you also have to deal with the uncontrollable nature of the profile, the fact that you're coming in from the Tour de France in many cases, and then, of course, the weather. The Basque Country is a really green place. It's a really beautiful place. One of the reasons that it is so green is that it rains a lot. However, I'm looking at the forecast right now. It doesn't look like there's any real bad weather in store for this weekend, so it could be a rare edition of the Clásica de San Sebastián. It could be a rare edition of a bike race in the Basque Country where we don't have that bad of weather for this weekend. So I guess we'll find out when we get a little closer. So now that we've poured over the route and the history and the storylines, let's take a look at some of the likely favorites who will hope to contend for the victory. All right, we discussed a little bit the weird dynamic of riders coming off of the Tour and coming into this race. I think a kind of byproduct of that is the fact that this start list, more than a lot of other start lists, and this is true generally in cycling, but especially so in this race, the start list is, things change a lot coming into the race. Nothing is static. You'll see guys removed from the start list the day before. I think people target this race at the beginning of the year. They think, well, this is going to be a good race for me. And then they get to the end of the Tour de France, and maybe if you've got a little bit of a cold or if your legs are sore, it doesn't sound so great riding another 200-kilometer race after you've just ridden the Tour. So a lot of guys will back out kind of at the last minute. We've already seen that this week. Alberto Contador is planning to ride the San Sebastian race. He has just withdrawn. 2013 winner Tony Gallopin has just withdrawn. And we're recording this as of Wednesday evening. Who knows who's going to withdraw in between now and the time we publish? Who knows who's going to withdraw in between then and race time? Things could change. We're working with what we've got here so far. What I'm looking at really is last year's winner, Alejandro Valverde. I think he's got to be the favorite for the race from the standpoint of the parkour being perfect for him, his form being excellent, and his experience here. He is a two-time winner of the Clásica de San Sebastián. Few riders have been as strong as he has in the one-day hilly races in the past decade. He's just really good at this kind of race, and at this race in particular. And I think last year he showed a really impressive strategy of winning this race. We kind of usually think of Valverde as a guy who waits for a sprint finish, but he actually attacked late in last year's race and won things that way. So he's very, very flexible, I guess, in this race, you could say, and he's willing to take some chances. That being said, the fact that Alejandro Valverde, the guy we know of as the one who tends to sit in the wheels, the fact that he attacked last year, I think that might suggest just how difficult it is to control this race. And I think it's a pretty wide open event, even though, yeah, sure, Valverde might look like the favorite, but I think there's a whole lot of really good climbers here. It's a hard to control course. I can see this going a whole bunch of different ways.
Another past winner we have on the start list is Philippe Gilbert. Certainly not the same rider who won it in 2011, but he's had kind of a renaissance this year. I mean, not any big classics wins, but he got a couple stages in the Giro, which is, you know, not nothing. And took a smaller win at GP Sarami, and, you know, at Tour de Wallonie, which is big if you're actually in Belgium. He took a stage and was pretty well placed on the GC, 7th overall. So a guy who is not coming in terrible form, maybe, you know, kind of fresher than everyone else since he hasn't had that Tour de France appearance. And a guy who knows how to win a bike race a lot of different ways. He can slip away like you saw Valverde do last year. He can also hang in for a sprint, although it just, like you said, seems so unlikely that that's going to happen because the course is so hard to control.
I think Gilbert might be the rider with the best chance of breaking the recent dominance of riders coming into this race from the Tour de France. He didn't ride the Tour de France. Most of the other top favorites here did, but he looks like he's got a pretty good chance. Also, can't forget BMC with Greg Van Avermaet. Top 10 last year. Extremely versatile. Looks to be in good form. And Samuel Sanchez. Despite his age, he's got a great tool set for this race, and he's been in the top 10 a bunch of times. So a lot of different options for BMC. Gilbert didn't race the Tour. Van Avermaet and Sanchez both did, and they all look to be in good form.
Yep. I mean, one of the guys coming off the Tour is Joaquim Rodriguez with 2 stage wins. I mean, that's a pretty good performance, but he also kind of, I mean, he's a former podium finisher at the Tour, nowhere near that this year, and at one point seemed maybe like he was going for the mountains classification, but again, really couldn't hold it together towards the end of the event, so I'm thinking maybe a little more worn out than we're used to seeing. Then again, he's a guy who can do almost anything as long as there's a hill involved, so certainly got to be on our favorites list.
And if Rodriguez is lacking, the provisional start list at least has his trusty lieutenant Daniel Moreno on it, and they're a really good combination together. They tend to be pretty strong in the hilly classics. So if a podium finisher from last year, Joaquim Rodriguez, isn't quite feeling it, definitely watch out for Daniel Moreno. Another rider who was very strong last year in this race, who was one spot ahead of Rodriguez and one spot behind the winner, Alejandro Valverde, was runner-up Bauke Mollema. Mollema, I think, maybe has a reputation for his stage racing abilities, but he's actually got a bit more explosiveness and a nicer sprint than I think a lot of people realize. And he's also kind of hungry to pick up a one-day win. We've actually spoken to Bauke on the Recon ride in the past, ahead of this year's Tirreno Adriatico. And given his big ride in San Sebastian last year, I figured it would make sense to check in with Bauke again to see how he's feeling ahead of the race this week. So I'll play for you now a conversation I had with Bauke Mollema via phone this afternoon. Bauke, first off, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
You've just finished the Tour de France. How did that go?
Well, pretty good. Yeah, I finished 7th overall, and it was a good performance. It was a really hard Tour de France this year. The level, I think, was really high, even higher than last year. I was happy to be up there with the big favorites. Finished 7th, and the goal was to be minimum top 10, and hopefully better. And I think I'm satisfied with my result.
As crazy as the Tour is, we're now into the back end of the season. Maybe some of the excitement has died down. Is it a drag to have to go back out there again this weekend and keep on racing? You know, get back to the normal grind after the huge spectacle of the Tour.
For me, it's not because San Sebastian is really one of my favorite classics, one of my favorite races also. It's a really, really nice race, nice area, very enthusiastic people there. And I like the race, and it's not hard because this week I'm doing a few criteriums to get in to stay in the rhythm. And yeah, tomorrow I already go Thursday to San Sebastian, and I just, it's just one day, and for one day it's not really difficult to motivate me, and then after I will take some rest, so I'm looking forward to that already.
You were on the podium last year. You were 2nd to Alejandro Valverde, so that means there's only one step higher for you to go. Do you have a plan to kind of make that jump from 2nd to the win this year?
The plan is to wait until the last climb, because last year they changed the route a little bit, and now there's a really steep, short climb, about 5-6 kilometers before the finish. And it's really, really hard climb, so I think everything will be decided there. So I will wait for that climb, and yeah, hopefully the legs are good enough to go and to take some time there, or to win the sprint from a small group after the climb.
San Sebastian and the Basque Country in general is really known as a hotbed for cycling. Can you just describe the atmosphere there, what it's like racing in the Basque Country?
Well, the area is really nice. It's really green. There's a lot of climbs, a lot of steep climbs also. But you have to be a little bit lucky with the weather because now I think the weather is okay. But in April, in sort of the Basque Country, it can be rainy, really bad weather also. But the people there, they really love cycling, you know. They're really enthusiastic. They know all the riders. I remember I think I was just 22, 23. I just started being a professional, and they already knew my name when I was going up a climb. And I think there's not many fans in other countries who know all the riders, not only the big favorites or the big names, but also the guys riding behind.
Bauke, you're kind of known as a stage racing star, a rider who's up there in the GCs and in the 1 week and the 3 week races, but you've also got a little bit of explosiveness. You got a nice sprint. Do you see the 1 day races as a big goal? Is it a goal of yours to take a big 1 day victory?
Yeah, well, for sure. I hope to win one big classic in my career or maybe more, but I think for me, the classification, stage races are the most important, especially the Grand Tours. But I really like the classics also. Not only the classics in April, like Amstel Gold Race, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, also San Sebastian. The classics in Canada I will do next month. Giro di Lombardy in Italy in October. Those kind of races suit me well because it's really hard. There's a lot of climbs in those classics, so I like it. But it's still hard because there's always for me, I'm good in stage races and also quite good in the classics. But there's some riders who are really specialists in the classics, like Rodriguez, Paul Aird, also Calopin. Those kind of riders, they are maybe a bit more explosive than I am, but. When I have a good day, I can fight for the victory, for sure.
The provisional start list has Julian Arredondo also at San Sebastian. He's kind of got that explosiveness as well. Do you see the potential to kind of use the 1-2 punch strategy here at San Sebastian?
Well, I hope so. You know, in the Tour de France, his level was not good enough to fight for a stage win, but maybe one-day races suit him better. And I think we have Arredondo, but also Bob Jungels, who was really strong in the last week in the Tour de France, and I think he will be there in the final. And I think we have 2-3 guys who can go for a really good result, and I think that's important for the team. It's a wild race, it's a nice race, so we'll be there.
The past few years, we've seen a lot of the top Tour de France names competing in San Sebastian, but many of them have ended up dropping out of the race pretty early on. Is it a big physical challenge to race a long one-day event like this the week after a Grand Tour?
Yeah, for sure. That's hard. And not only physical, but also because mentally, you know, the Tour is finished. You've done a lot of training before the Tour, so mentally you think it's over. And then to motivate yourself for another race, I think for a lot of riders, that's really hard. Especially, you know, with this week, you're back with the family, you have some criteria to do, but yeah, I like it, you know, it's just a one-day race, it's not a stage race like a Tour of Poland, you know, that's something else to motivate you for 1 week race, but it's a nice race, and of course, there will be some GC guys from the Tour who maybe on paper they are one of the favorites, but who will probably have a bad day or have difficulties being in good form again after the tour.
Well, Bauke, last time we talked, you went out and you finished on the podium of a really big race, Tirreno Adriatico. So I'm hoping that we're a good luck charm for you again. Looking forward to seeing you out there on the roads.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
So that was Bauke Mollema. He's kind of known for his stage racing abilities, but this parkour really does suit him. And if this comes down to a reduced sprint, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. He won the reduced sprint for second last year, and he's coming in on good form. He was seventh in the Tour de France, and that's behind just an elite field of Tour de France contenders. This was a really hard Tour de France. I think Mollema showed himself to be pretty strong, and I'm looking to see him do pretty well here in San Sebastian.
Another guy to keep an eye on is Mikel Landa from Astana. He's kind of like, so remember Fabio Aru really breaking out at the Tour of Italy last year? You know, there was that thrill and that sensation around seeing an Italian do just brilliantly well, a young guy that everybody's been kind of watching and waiting for to kind of show up. And Landa is that guy, not the guy from Inglourious Basterds, but that guy from the Basque Country who everyone else has been watching very closely. You know, he's been the prodigy. He hadn't really shown up until the Giro this year. I think this is going to be really special for him. You know, this is where his fan base is strongest. This is where he's from. This is, you know, it's going to be a big party. There's going to be a lot of eyes on him. There's some pressure with that. But you see these young guys, when they have that first hit year, it's like nothing can take them down. So certainly a dangerous rider.
It's interesting. I think Landa is the one to watch on Astana, but the team has another Spanish rider who for a few years was dominant in this race, Luis Leon Sanchez. At his best, he's got an excellent kind of wide-ranging skill set for just this sort of route. He's a two-time past winner. You know, not long ago, he would have been the top favorite, but he hasn't quite had it in the legs recently, so I think, yeah, up-and-comer breakout star Landa might be the better bet, despite Sanchez's excellent track record here. Speaking of breakout riders, Etix Quickstep has one of France's most exciting young riders on the squad. And Julian Alaphilippe, while he has not done a whole lot in the last couple of weeks because he was not at the Tour, you got to think he's going to like this parkour. The team is, as always, pretty stacked for this race. Rigoberto Urán also here, got a pretty strong sprint. Zdeněk Stybar is here, and he did pretty well last year. I think he was up there. He finished in 10th place. It's a little hilly for Stybar, but if he can hold on, he's got a really great chance of that finale suiting him, because to me, he just seems to be climbing better and better every year, and he won a stage at the Tour de France this year with a very late climb. So,
I mean, he won a world championships with a late climb and going fast on the downhill. So,
wait, what sport was that?
The sport that currently happens in cycling right now. I mean, the Tour is over, so it's cross season, right?
Oh, right. Sorry, I guess I must have missed that one.
Yeah, you're too old. You're stuck in the past, man.
Yeah,
cross season starts the day after the Champs-Élysées.
Oh, okay. All right. So yeah, Etix Quickstep, really strong. I think that's a team to watch out for because there's a whole lot of options, and this is a course that could see a lot of different attacks, and if I'm Quickstep, I would send a lot of guys off the front just to see what could stick.
Kind of on the other end of the spectrum from Etix Quickstep, you've got Cannondale Garmin, where the team is not usually particularly strong in this sort of race, but they have this confused prodigy in Dan Martin, who is just, he was really good at being in the mix at the Tour, not as consistently as Sagan, but like almost he would just kind of show up towards the end of the stage and be like, if you had been here a kilometer earlier, you could have contended for the win. That said, when the guy is on and does it right, he's just untouchable. Like, we saw it at his Liège win, we saw it at Lombardia last year. It's such a coin toss whether the super aware Dan Martin is going to show up and make everyone else look like subhumans, or whether, you know, he's going to have that near miss where, like, you know, had the legs, had everything, just wasn't quite set up right.
Rui Costa, another guy who tends to thrive on this kind of parkour. He won a world championship on a hilly kind of parkour like this. He was really strong in Lombardia last year. He had to abandon the Tour de France with really a litany of terrible sounding ailments. I think he had enlarged kidneys, among other things. But he says he's feeling a lot better now. And if he takes the form that he had going into the Tour de France and is healthy, I think this could actually be a really good race for him. So I have no idea what to expect from Rui Costa, but this is the sort of course that I think suits him, assuming his kidneys have returned to their normal size.
I mean, enlarged kidneys really skew the power to mass ratio. So
that's fair. You got all kinds of outsiders for this race. As we said, I think this looks like a pretty wide open race. AG2R's Romain Bardet, I think, could surprise some people. He's really improved as a one-day race these past couple years. And Alexi Villermoz, his teammate, won a stage in the Tour with a late climb. Very explosive.
He won a ridiculous stage.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed that he didn't do that ever again in the Tour.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking he would, and then he kind of went quiet after that. But hey, this is another opportunity. And they've got a nice little team, AG2R, coming into this race. Jan Bakelants also on the squad, as is veteran Recon Ride interviewee Ugo Uhl, at least according to the provisional start list. So AG2R, team to watch out for. And then Lotto Soudal, they're going to be missing Tony Gallopin, who won the race for them back in 2013. But Tim Wellens and Jelle Vandenberg, both guys who could be able to make something happen here. They both tend to do well in this kind of hilly sort of race. Watch out for the Yates twins. Adam made the final selection of last year's race, but he crashed himself out of contention in the final few kilometers. Simon might even be better suited to the profile because I think he's got a bit more pop, but both look like they'll have a good chance. They both look to be in good form, and Green Edge always seems to have strong teams for the kind of hilly profile races. We mentioned that Alberto Contador has dropped out of the race. Tinkoff Saxo instead will be led by Roman Kreuziger, who has done very well here in the past, though I don't know what to make of his form now. Yeah, I'm cycling a couple different options. Harlinson Pantano, I think, could be a nice surprise rider here. Sylvain Chavanel, Matthias Franck. You got a whole bunch of climbers who don't really have the one-day pedigree, but who might be able to make something happen if they can get away on the big climbs. Thibaut Pinot, Warren Barguil, Daniel Navarro, Jakob Fuglsang, Nicholas Roche. I'm really going to have my eye on Caja Rural because they've had an impressive past 2 months or so racing some smaller races, as pro-continental teams tend to do. They have a number of riders who could be flying under the radar, could kind of try to get into some moves and maybe try to surprise the pack that way. Carlos Barbero, Angel Madrazo, Peyo Bilbao, Ahmed Shiruka, David Arroyo. So they're not really going to be up there, I think, viewed as top favorites or anything, but that could help out with allowing them to get into a sneaky move, and who knows, maybe something sticks on a profile like this. It's just so hard to control that Caja Rural has, I think, a better chance than they normally do of actually pulling off a big World Tour level victory. All right, so that's the start list. Let's get to the best part of the show, the most looked forward to part of the show, where we name our predictive podium. I'll take the stab at it first. I see Alejandro Valverde as the favorite, but because this is such a wide open race, I do think that there are chances for other guys if they are brave and bold and decide to make attacks from afar to try to make something happen. So Philippe Gilbert, coming off some success in Belgium right now, to me looks like another good, strong contender for the podium. And then Bauke Mollema, to me, strong enough in the Tour to show that the form is there. Again, he's got that nice sprint, a little more explosiveness than people realize. And I think he does want that big one-day win to kind of go along with the stage racing success that people know him for.
It's a good podium pick. As usual, I'm going to, play the narrative angle. I really like Mika Landa here. I think he has a very good team. He has Luis Leon Sanchez, as you mentioned. A lot of experience on this course. He's got Michele Scarponi, Rein Terame, just strong, experienced guys that know how to ride a race like this. I think because he's a bit of an outsider, he'll have that ability to get away. Like, he won't be as closely marked as, say, a Valverde or a Gilbert. And in fact, once he does, or another rider like him, but I'm picking him, gets away, the field is probably going to mark itself out of it. I think that's what we've seen, not So not as literally in past years, but we definitely has been sort of a trend of one escapee kind of holding off this group that can't quite coordinate and work together. So I like Landa for the win. I'll go with Valverde and Gilbert in second and third in a smallish disorganized group sprint with a lot of gesticulating and shouting.
Wouldn't it be great if that's exactly what happened?
And that would be so cool.
Next show we could say Cosmo Catalano correctly predicted the gesticulations of Philippe Gilbert and Alejandro Valverde. So that's our podium predictions. The race is not that far away, so check in on Saturday for the hopefully slightly improved production values. It will be nice to see some of that unexpected, but it'll be nice to see some of that this year. And we're going to be back actually quite soon because while there are plenty of riders in Spain gearing up for the Clásica de San Sebastián, a whole other contingent of pros are headed to Poland for the Tour de Pologne. Another very interesting race with a kind of weird post-Tour de France pre-Vuelta dynamic, but one that has sprung a lot of young riders to big successes in the past couple years. So it's the kind of race I think it's definitely worth watching. We're going to be back to preview that quite soon. Keep an eye out for the next Recon Ride pre-race show. Until then, enjoy the racing in the Basque country. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.